So the past vast number of weeks, we've been looking and walking through the story of Daniel, and how Daniel and then his three friends, but how they stood up for the Lord in a alien place. They were aliens in a strangers in a strange land, let's put it that way. Carried away, taken away from what they knew, everyone they knew, everyone they loved, and carried there to Babylon, and there made the decision to stand up for the Lord, to not allow the, you know, to not be assimilated by the empire. How's that? To not be assimilated, but in fact to be God's people. And they made that call again and again with their lives on the line. And so as we looked at this last Sabbath and went right to the story of Daniel and the lion's den, we discovered that Daniel and the lion's den is not just a story for children. And it is a story for children, but not just. It goes deep, right to the very core issues of who you and I are called to be in the time in which we live, to stand faithful, to stand true. And there's a member of our congregation that many of you do not know her story, but she and her family experienced this in ways that many of us who grew up in America have never experienced. And so Dubravka Moore, would you please come join me? And together we're going to just pray God's blessing as you come and share your story, the story of how your family was challenged by the Lord to stay faithful to Him in the former Yugoslavia. And I think it's going to come up on the screen here, but you'll see a map there very soon. But first of all, Dubravka, may I ask you, we know you as Dubravka Moore, but would you please tell us your maiden name as well and what country your family was from?
So my maiden name...
Oh, hold on a second.
So my maiden name is Stefanovic.
Stefanovic.
That's right.
That sounds like maybe son of Stephen. I don't know.
Maybe. So I come from former Yugoslavia, which now it's divided into five different countries.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
I'll do this a few times this morning, so please forgive me. But I think I know the Stefanovic name. And it looks... I know the Stefanovic name because here is... This is a commentary in the book of Daniel, and this is your brother. What is his name, Dubravka?
Zdravko.
Zdravko. And we might call him Dravko, but Dravko, okay? And then, I've never heard him speak, but I have heard this brother speak, and he has the revelation of Jesus Christ commentary in the book of book of Revelation. And so, his name is Ranko Stefanovic, and by the way, he has a book, this book, which is a wonderful, wonderful commentary. He is now brought into this little paperback book, which we are actually studying on Wednesday nights on our Zoom Wednesday Bible Fellowship. And it makes the book of Revelation so accessible. And any one of you are invited to come join us in that class, which is on Zoom on Wednesday nights, except for maybe the next couple of weeks, if I might miss that. But your family... I'm just amazed how your family has allowed God to use you. So having said that, now please tell us about Yugoslavia and where your family, where you're from.
Thank you, Pastor George. Like I said, during the first service, I grew up in a family where my dad was very open up, good speaker, and a couple of my brothers are just like him. My mother is more like timid, and she would always do like background stuff, helping in the kitchen in church, cooking stuff for others, cleaning. And I think I'm more like my mom. I did speak before, but not in this church, so bear it with me.
So, Dubravka, I'm going to say it again. This is family right here. We're all family here, and we're just gathered, sitting around the living room waiting to hear the story.
I shared my story this morning, and when I came back to my seat, my husband is like, you forgot this, you forgot that. And I'm like, okay, that would take more days, probably a book. So I'll try to remember what I shared during the first service. Maybe I'm going to add a couple more things. Depend how much time Pastor George is going to give me. I pretty much took all his time during the first service, and I apologize.
Oh, no. It was wonderful. No, at the end, I'm just going to say a few words that helps connect your experience with where we live now in America in our time. But please share your story, Dubravka.
Okay, so I was born in former Yugoslavia. The map is right here on the screen. Former Yugoslavia was consisted of six republics, Slovenia, Croatia, predominantly Catholics, then Serbia, Montenegro, Macedonia, Greek Orthodox people lived there. Of course, there was a mixture of all people everywhere, but those are the ones that had majority. And then we have Bosnia. There was a mixture of both Catholic and Greek Orthodox and Muslim people. Muslim people were either Croats or Serbian, but they accepted Muslim religion because of Turkish ruling 400 years over that territory. So that area was really affected with civil war that we had in 1990s. And it was just brutal. It was terrible.
It was awful.
And I am so glad that God pulled us from that area out because, so my dad's family, they lived in Croatia. They were a very rich family. But I believe there were two sisters and two brothers, and my dad's dad, my grandpa, died when my dad was just a child. On the top of that, my dad lost both brothers, and he got gravely sick. So one of the aunts ended up paying the hospital bill and saved my dad's life. His mom didn't have any faith, and she was really different woman. She just alcoholic and very, very different woman. And so my dad was raised up in a home that didn't have any faith and just not very good home, abusive. And she did remarry and ended up having two daughters, and she paid much more attention to them than to my dad. So when he was between 16 and 17, the Second World War already started, and he ended up being pulled into the army. Now, during the Second World War, we had several armies in our country. One was Croatian National Army. They were fighting Serbs and everybody else. There was a Serbian army fighting everybody else. And then we have Germans, Nazis. And during that time, it was a huge chaos, according to my parents, that it was just a bloody, bloody time. If you study history, maybe you came across the President Tito, who he was a Croat, but he formed the Partisans Army.
So the word is partisan? The partisans.
Yes.
And they were.
And those were the people that they were. They didn't fight on Croatian or Serbian side. They were there to kind of free the land, push the Nazis out, put the other two armies under control, and create new country. And that's exactly what happened. When Nazis were pushed out and the other armies were under control, he reunited those six republics into one country, and the name was Yugoslavia.
Now, for your father to join and become a partisan, he needed to become a communist as well.
When he was when he joined the army, he became, and that was a requirement, and in one way, that was the only way for him to save his life, to be in the army, because according to my parents, it was brutal, and they were killing back and forth, all young men and old, and they just didn't care. All armies were against each other. It was a really difficult time. So my dad was in the Second World War, and he never wanted to share much stories from it. He said, that's in the past, and let's leave it that way. God brought me out. He showed me the light, and I just want to go forward. He became, his story is something like a story of Paul and Saul becoming Paul. Because my dad wasn't a very nice man. He was a drinker. I mean, he saw all kinds of stuff during the war. He was a heavy smoker. He didn't believe in God. He cursed God day and night. And when he opened the Bible and he met Jesus, he wept. He said he just couldn't believe the God who created whole heaven and earth and everything else was willing to die for me, the biggest sinner ever.
Wow. So when he opened the Bible, so tell, share with us how he came through and survived very, very serious
injuries. Yeah, he got injured. The bullet went through his leg, destroyed one of his leg, but by God's grace, they fixed the leg and he walked up to 87. there is another story when they were crossing a really swell river at night running from the Germans. They had a huge rope across the river and commander gave specific order that if anybody get pulled by current, that nobody
so the current, if they, the current pulled them away, just let them go.
Just let them go because they wanted to save as many people as they can. And my dad was a very young guy, and he got pulled by the current, and guess who saved him? The commander. He just felt so bad for him that he went out of his way and saved my dad.
Your dad was a teenager at the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then there's another story that I mentioned during the first service that he was in a group of young men that they were supposed to carry the mails from one army to another, and they were separating them who's going to go. Well, it was over 40 of them. And they were in kind of secluded area between the mountains that nobody knew that they were there. So they were relaxing and getting ready for next day to decide who's going to do what task. And my dad said it was a really nice day. They took a swim in the river and then they went to sleep. They took off their uniforms. They were relaxed knowing that nobody knows. Well, somehow Serbian army found out that they were there and during the night surrounded them and they were ready to kill everybody. Well, praise the Lord, there was another partisan army close by that was able to come and save them. And so my dad's life was spared again. So that's his little background. My mom, her parents came from Poland. And they were very devoted Catholics. And even though they practiced all what they knew in the religion, they never had chance to see the Bible or to hold the Bible in their hands. And my mom's dream was to have a Bible in her hands someday. And she said that that's all she wanted.
So well, she couldn't just go down to the store and buy a Bible?
No. At that time, the common people in that area in Europe was very strict. They couldn't own the Bible. So it was the priests that they would read, and mainly in Latin or Greek language, which common people couldn't understand anyway. So my mom was just hoping that someday, by some kind of miracle, she'll gonna be able to get the Bible. And this is what happened. My dad's aunt became Adventist, and I don't know the story how she became, and she was in different city, and she would occasionally come and try to tell my dad that he needs to be a better man and try to kind of be missionary to my dad, and my dad didn't show any interest in anything. Well, one time when she came, she brought the Bible and gave it to her brother, to my dad's uncle, and tried to witness to him, but he didn't show any interest. Nobody was really interested in any religion at that time. And so my mom and dad were having some kind of party at home connected to religion, Greek Orthodox, and the grandma actually was organizing all that, and they invited their aunt, and she would never really come, but at that time she decided to come anyway. And when she came, my mom was telling me she was preparing some meal and she was using the lard, putting on the cake. And my dad walked into the kitchen and said, "Don't serve that to the aunt. She doesn't need that." And she's like, "Why?" She said, "I serve her anyway and I always feel bad about it." And anyway, so the aunt started telling my dad again stuff, and my dad said, "Well, if you want to preach, go ahead and preach to my wife. And by the way, do you have a Bible?" And she said, "Of course I do. Actually, I just brought it, you know, just go. The other uncle was in the neighborhood. Can you go and get it?" So dad went over there, and uncle charged him for the Bible. He got for free, but he charged my parents But my mom said she would pay anything. She didn't care. She just wanted that Bible. And when Bible came to our home, guess who started reading the Bible just for curiosity? My dad was a really good reader. Any book that came across, my dad read not once, but two or three times. So dad opened up the Bible and started reading.
So it was dad who read it, not your mom, but your dad actually started reading the Bible.
My mom didn't have much interest in changing anything. She was a very devoted Christian in what she knew. And
sure.
So she just wanted Bible to see. But she said shortly after that, when Aunt found out that dad is becoming interested, she contacted one of the pastors, and they arranged a couple Adventist people from another church far away to come and visit and study with my dad. And since my mom already had a second baby, she couldn't sit down, so she had to carry baby and try to put to sleep. And she said the windows were open and she would listen. And she said those people were amazing, like angels. She said, I never seen anything like that. They lived the way they preached. And that's what caught attention.
And that was happening. That was happening in your home.
In our home.
In
yes.
In your home, these people came and
they
shared.
Came, yes, and so my dad became really interested. And
because there was no Adventist church there.
No Adventist church. They were one of the first Adventists, except one old lady that came before them.
Mm-hmm.
To Adventism, and she was some kind of actress and very known, but then she was rejected by pretty much whole city when she accepted, and she was so happy when mom and dad became interested. Mm. So she wasn't the only one.
So three of them in that city.
Three of them in the city. And my mom said the other thing that amazed her, my dad became a very sickly man, with drinking so much and smoking and eating really bad. Doctor gave him just few years to live. Well, my dad lived almost up to 87 years. So, I mean, that proved what change of the lifestyle can do for the person.
So, and your mom, you were just talking with your mom this morning.
Yes.
You were awake at 3 o'clock this morning talking to your mom.
Yes, because of time difference, 9 hours. So she's 90. She turned 99 in May, and she just had a stroke last year, actually twice. So she's very intact here, but her body is slowly giving up. But I had great conversation with Skype, and she told me quite a few different stories. During the war, she was a pharmacy tech. One day, the army came and took the pharmacist away, killed him. And then when the other army came...
And they took all the medicine as well.
Medicine. Then the other army came. She was accused of helping the other army, which she didn't have anything to do with. But they took her and the rest of medicine, and many of medicine for the scabies and other stuff. She had to make it from scratch because... It was a long time ago. So she has great recipe to these days about lots of stuff and good remedies. But they took my mom. She didn't end up in a small big camp, but they called small Auschwitz. It was a terrible place. My mom spent one night. They were in a train car parked by that place. They were heading to another camp. And she said it was terrible, the worst night ever. They were just tied up people with the wires, threw them into the river. The river got clogged with the bodies. And she said that she couldn't describe all terrible things she saw. But she ended up going to few different camps. Few days in one, they would move them to another one, to another. And she said that during that time, she prayed the way she knew, and she said she would never sit down and have a cup of water or piece of bread without really thanking God. She said when you are so hungry and there is no drop of water, you are really thankful God for everything. She said it was early spring and trees would bud, and she said we would pick the little leaves and buds from the trees and chew just to satisfy our hungry bellies. It was terrible, but God saved her too. And when they brought her back, put her in a basement, water up to the waist, she spent whole night. And the next day, by God's grace, there was a man who recognized her and said, she's not spy, she's not anything. She is just pharmacy tech who is trying to help everybody, and he pulled her out and saved her. Mm. So then mom and dad ended up getting married, right? And then they got to study with Adventist people.
So getting married, was that a good situation? Well,
I don't know how they ended up together. My mom being devoted Christian and my dad totally opposite. And when my first brother, Ranko, was born, my mom said she was planning to divorce my dad because she couldn't stand the curses, and she was so scared to pray inside the house when my dad was around because he wasn't a very good man. And when, you know, he didn't want anything to do with God.
And you said she had trouble in her church when she married as well.
She got a message from the priest that she's not welcome anymore because she's not marrying the same religion, from same religion, mm-hmm. the man. And so, but she continued praying and practicing at home. Mm-hmm. So when they decided to get baptized in Seventh-day Adventist Church, at that time, we didn't have church. Of course, they were one of the first Christians, Protestants there. During the communist regime, and that was different, we had a social communism. So people many times don't understand. Our country was open. We could travel. We could go places. Churches were open, but you couldn't practice activities outside the church.
I want to interrupt again.
Sure.
So this is a crucial point. When you hear the word, the phrase religious liberty, which is, we as the Seventh-day Adventist people have always been committed to religious liberty. Religious liberty, when you hear that phrase, it means liberty to come and worship, but also the liberty to go outside the walls of the church and share your faith. When you hear the phrase religious freedom, religious freedom means a restricted view of religious liberty. You say, oh, we grant religious freedom. You can go inside your church and you can worship whatever you want, but you can't take anything outside the walls. So when we hear that, we've got to hear it and know what that means in our day. When people say, oh, I'm for religious freedom. Well, are you religious? Oh, good. Are you for religious liberty? So that piece, anyway, it's something for us to learn as we go forward.
And you know, you have to understand that was just a few years after Second World War when the government was trying to establish themselves. So they were much more strict than later on. My dad became kind of like a missionary. Later on, every Sunday, I used to go and sell books with him. We used to go and study Bible with other people. You just had to go to police.
The police station and register.
Permission, and it wasn't a big deal. I mean, it was different, but that was the like first 10 years after Second World War, and that was pretty difficult at that time.
Yes, yes.
So my mom and dad got baptized at night in the river because that was the only way they could. And for 16 years, they had a church in their kitchen. So once a month, they had a people coming on the bike from another city. They had to leave on Friday and travel for hours on the bike so they can come and encourage my mom and dad and teach them more from the Bible. And every time they would stay over the night, my mom and dad had to pay fine for it.
So when people came once a month and stayed in your parents' home and taught and worshiped together, then there was a fine levied by the city would levy a fine on them for having these religious worship services.
Yeah, or just hosting somebody. They were all accused like a spies. So once a year, also at the beginning, right after Second World War, there was a city around maybe 25,000 people. They had to come to the main square and they would discuss certain problems and issues and tell them different stuff. Well, my mom and dad, when they show up there one time, all accusations were toward them. They were accused as spies. They're planning different activities, and pretty much everybody turned against them.
So they thought they were American spies. Yes. Because they had become Protestants. Something new, Protestant faith, and they said, oh, you must be spies from America. Mm-hmm. So they were in very, very serious danger in being in the town square being accused of being spies.
Yes. And then the other problem that we did have was 6 days of school.
But they were allowed to leave without...
Yeah, all accusations came against them and they had to pay pay the fine.
They had to pay fines.
And they were kind of watched by everybody. My mom said, like, wherever you would turn, there was somebody spying on us, looking. And all so-called friends were turning back on them.
Mm.
And she said it was so difficult that she said, I can't even describe to you. The neighbors, my brothers and sisters got really bullied in neighborhood, in schools, and
they got bullied by the by the students.
By the students, by the teachers, by neighbors. I mean, everywhere we went.
So your family, now you were the youngest, Dubrovka?
I am.
You are the youngest. There were seven children, and they made a decision to raise these children to know and love Jesus in that setting. So what was that like?
It wasn't easy. So because of 6 days of school.
So 6 days of school, meaning Saturday was a school day.
The only day that we have off was Sunday. So they were trying to force all of us, and there were a couple other families in church that they came. My dad, like I said, he became like a missionary, and he invited a couple of those people who studied Bible with him, and they were selling the books, and they were studying. So a couple other people became Adventists, and one lady, she was a widow, had two daughters. She ended up in prison because she didn't let girls to go to school on Saturday. My mom and dad had to pay the fine.
So she went to prison because she let her girls go to school.
And it was very difficult. The whole church members were taking care of the girls. And she was a wonderful lady. I still remember her.
Mm.
And it was a very difficult time. Through whole elementary schooling, it was just too much bullying going on. And very, very difficult. So my oldest brother, Ranko, wanted to become an attorney, but not even one high school would accept him. So he ended up going to, at that time they established one, it was kind of theology school. It was located somewhere in Serbia, and Ranko ended up going there. And years later, he had to take classes to get a degree for high school. It was really difficult for him. But then God bless him, and he continues schooling outside, and he's doing good, even though they said that he'll never succeed. They told each one of us same story. So there are a couple pictures. This nice castle here, it's from Adventist boarding school that I ended up going after my eighth grade. And coming over there, it felt like I was in heaven. We did have school every Sunday, but we were free on Saturday and nobody bothered us. Except at the end of the school year, we had to go to the nearby city and give exam for every single subject that we had. And some of the teachers were very reasonable, and they said, well, you are just from different school, and they were very nice, but the other ones were pretty greedy. They knew if they would make students to come back, if they failed, they get more money. So it was a lot over there going on. So so my dad ended up losing the job because he didn't work on Saturday. So it was a very difficult time. When he got second job, his supervisor was trying to do everything and anything. So my dad said, okay, I'm gonna come every Sunday instead of Saturdays. He agreed, but many Sundays my dad would not get paid for, or they would deduct from his paycheck. He, for years and years and years, he never had one day of vacation and never got paid for. It was really difficult time. At one point,
when he would work on Sunday to make up time, he would not be paid for that day.
Most of the Sundays not. Some yes, and some of them had more fear of God than the others. But this particular supervisor wasn't a very nice man. He targeted my dad and a couple other men and decided to do some really difficult project. Made my dad and two other co-workers to climb really tall ladder, or I don't know exactly, even though my dad told him it's very unstable, it's not safe, but he made them to go. Well, when they were on the top, the part got broken, and one man ended up falling down and he got killed. The other one got injured really bad, and my dad ended up hanging by one hand. His feet were hitting the wire electrical wire and getting burned. So he called down for them to turn off electricity, and they got him down and to the hospital. And to make long story short, from that day, they didn't torture my dad so much about not coming on Saturday. They kind of tolerated him, let's put that way. Mm. And then through my dad, about 10 others, Adventists got job at the same factory. My dad got a job, and so they called them a little Adventist community, and they gave them all Sabbath free. So yeah, it was the dad who kind of opened up the way for many of them. And so then when I was about 8 years old, we moved across the bridge, there was one picture, to another city to be close to my dad's work. It was like walking distance instead of him getting up 3 o'clock in the morning, getting on train to work whole day. And I was the only one, I was the youngest in the family and the only one with mom and dad at the time. So the only one from church, we had just a few young people that they were coming, but I didn't attend the school on Saturday, and it wasn't easy. Every Monday they would pull me in the front, and I had to give explanation where I was on Saturday and why I didn't show up, and I mean over and over again.
What grade did that start in?
What
grade were you when that started?
Well, I moved when I started third grade.
Third grade.
And then by the fifth grade, I had geography just on Saturday, not any other day. And of course, I missed every single class. My teacher tried to bribe me to come to the class, and she was going to help me, and that didn't work out. So she organized a group of the students from the eighth grade to give me a little lessons in the library once a week to prepare me for a big exam at the end of the year. I was supposed to come at the end of the year and take a big exam in front of all teachers in the school, and the way they presented, I was terrified. And then right before that exam, it was maybe a week or two before we had a final exam on Saturday for geography, and my teacher approached me on the hallway and said, if I show up, she knows that we go to church early in the morning, and then I'll be home by 1 o'clock. My class is not till 2. If I come, she's going to put me by the best student, and I can even cheat.
And so she was going to seat you by the best student so you could look over and cheat and get the
and
right
cheat
answers.
So I can pass, and then I don't have to come for that exam. And being fifth grader, it was very tempting. I was terrified. And she said, don't tell mom and dad. Well, I went home, and guess what? I told mom and dad right away. And they are like, well, you know how we raise you up. You know the God's law. And let's pray, and then you bring decision. Ooh. And we prayed.
So
and,
they gave you this. They yes. allowed you to make that decision.
Yeah. And my dad
That's
told
huge.
Me, if you obey and stay faithful to God, He's gonna work out the things. But you know, when you are so young, it's so hard. It's not that I didn't have faith, but I was very scared too. And being bullied day after day, you know, you get kind of occasionally weak. So we prayed, and so I went following day, and I told my teacher that I won't come. She was very upset, very, very upset. Threatened me with final exam in front of everybody and how they're going to treat me, and pull me by the hand, showing in all classrooms the child who believes in God. There is no God. We all came from the monkeys, and all kind of stories. I just remember closing my eyes. I'm like, it's going to be over. And the day came when I was supposed to go and take exam. It was a new, nice building. I walk in, beautiful stairs. And remember climbing up there, and I'm like, it's so quiet. I can't believe it. Where are the people? Usually the teachers, they talk, especially when they are alone. So I come to the main room where they were all supposed to be. I can't remember, over 30 of them. And nobody was there. And I was, what's going on? So there was a cleaning lady approached me, and she said, what are you looking for? And so I told her, oh, you are the girl. Oh, yeah, they told me, just go to library. The other couldn't show up. I'm like, okay. So I go to the small library, and beside my teacher, there was a counselor lady. She was a communist lady, but wonderful person. She said that she didn't understand our religion and our belief, but that she just loved me the way I am, and that I was a really good child, comparing to other teachers telling me that I'll never succeed in the life, never finish even elementary school. She was totally opposite. She's like, no, you know, I don't understand you, but I do admire you. And she said, I'll help you in any way. So when I show up for the test, I was like, oh my, it's just teacher and her. So okay, I know teacher is no big fan of me, fine, but at least I have another person that kind of, she's nice to me. and the exam started, and I think teacher went first. She wanted to go and grab some coffee, and when she exited, counselor said, look, I want to help you. You need to pass this exam. Here are the questions I'm going to ask you. Open up the book, look through the questions. So when she comes, you know, that I know you are scared. I know you study, but, you know, it's really hard and you are so young. And that, so I kind of looked through a little bit. And when teacher came, she said, can I start exam? Sure, go ahead. So she asked me those questions. And I answer, and then the counselor said, well, it's my turn to go and grab the coffee. And so she left, and the teacher said, look, I don't agree with you and everything, how you treated me, and but I'm going to help you anyway. And she said, here are the questions I'm going to ask you. and she did exactly the same, and neither one of them knew they were doing.
So, Dubravka, I'm just thinking, hear your parents saying, Dubravka, if you are faithful to God, he'll be faithful to you. And then you walk in and you make the decision, and then God gives
open
you that
the door.
Moment. He opened that door.
And it was just incredible. I was so happy. I was running home. On the way to school, I was dragging myself, and a couple of my classmates made sure to bully me on the way to my exam. But
to bully you.
Yes. Yeah. But on the way back, nobody was there. I was just running. I was so happy. I passed the exam. I could go to my sixth grade. Similar experience happened later on when I was in college. I was doing my radiology school. By that time, the system was pretty loose, but I did have one of the classes, Marxism, that I had to take Friday evening, late evening. So I approached my professor, and I told him that I don't mind doing it till the day comes short, and then that's the day I observe after sunset. If there is any way I can go with another class, physical therapy or somebody else, and attend at Marxism, so I can, in order to take exam at the end of the year, I had to have his signature, and he refused. And later on, I heard that he used to be a Catholic priest who became communist and was a very angry man. And I didn't know what to do. I attended few classes. I tried to study, but I knew that there is no way I can attend the final exam and without his signature. So I ended up going and to the pastor, and I pray, and a couple of my good friends pray with me, and then I ended up going and talking to the dean. And he was a wonderful man. I came in, and he's like, come on, sit down and talk to me, and I explained to him, and he said, oh, I totally understand. We had another student, and he was just...
The man who was a priest became a communist.
Yes.
He was very angry man.
Yes. He was the Marxism professor.
The Marxism professor.
Yes. And he said, you know, he's very difficult to deal with. He's my colleague, and I'm not supposed to talk about him, but I can just tell you, stay away from him. And I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you my signature, so don't tell anybody anything. You just show up for the final exam. And that's exactly what I did. I studied. And when I walk in, it was quite few of us. It was a big room. He noticed me right away. And he's like, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I came to take exam. You can't. You don't have my signature. And I said, that's true, but I do have somebody else. So he took the little booklet, opened up, and when he saw Dean's signature, it was really tough. He was very mad, and that exam was very interesting. He was throwing all kind of questions at me, and I don't know if you ever had chance to read Marxism.
So you, in front of the whole class, he's throwing these right in front of everybody.
I pray like never before, because I study. I didn't understand anything. I just study and I try to memorize. And they said, I don't remember anything, honestly, but they said that I actually answer all questions amazingly, which I don't remember, honestly. There was one experience. The other, when I passed, He gave me low grade, which I don't care at all. I was able to continue with my education. And during the same year, I got very sick. I ended up in intensive care, and I missed my one of my exams. And I knew there is no way, it wasn't enough time to study for that exam. It was physics, and I loved it, but I had barely a week, and I still didn't feel good when I came back from the hospital, and I didn't know what's going to happen. And I prayed and prayed. I studied, and I mean, I had books and books all over me. I got up 3 o'clock in the morning and I prayed. I was on my knees. I said, Lord, without you, I'll never make it. Please help me. I said, you know I like this subject, but I just don't have enough time, and because of my sickness, not because I was lazy. And then I went back, I studied a little bit more. Around 5 o'clock, I lay down, because my exam was around like 9 or 10. So I had another hour just to sleep a little bit. And I fell asleep. And I still do remember. I just, it was something like, do not be afraid through my dream. Nobody said it, but it was kind of sense of that. And then I saw the blackboard and the questions. And like pull 3 questions, and that's exactly what we needed to do during the exam, pull the card with the 3 questions, and the questions were appearing on the board, and I heard the voice remember those. And I woke up, I'm like, that's kind of weird. So I got up, I went, opened up the book, and I'm like, this is silly. Then I prayed and I felt impressed. I should really read through those 3 questions. And I did. And I just studied another hour instead of sleeping. I studied. I went to the classroom and everybody was scared. Teacher was really tough. She was nice. And I said a prayer, pulled the card, and exactly 3 questions. Wow. I still remember that. It was just a true miracle. For me, I knew that God cares about everything. This morning when I prayed that God gives me courage to share the story of my family, I texted to my very good friend. She doesn't even belong to this denomination, but she is a wonderful friend. Mm-hmm. And her encouragement was, go, God is going to be with you. She said, it's not just your story, it's his story. He was making story through your family.
Yes.
Brought the tears in my eyes. God has his children in every denomination, in every church, in every country. And if we stay faithful to him, nothing is too hard for him. He already has a story for us written. We just need to allow him to work that story through us.
Oh, amen.
And don't be afraid when tribulation comes, turn to him. I would like to share the verse that my mom and dad live by. They said, but if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you.
Is this Joshua?
That's Joshua 24:15.
Yes.
Then choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. And that's my prayer for my family that God gave me. And I love them dearly. And I pray for each one of you and your families, that God can lead you through this life, and then we can all be together eternally. Mm.
And all God's people said,
amen.
And all God's people shouted.
Rocka, thank you.
thank you so much for coming and sharing that story with us today. And we've been blessed. We've been blessed by the ministry that your brothers have brought forth with these commentaries on the book of Daniel, the book of Revelation.
I was privileged to be to actually be at camp meeting. I think it was 2 years or 3 years ago that your brother Ronco came and was here and presented on. Was it 4 years ago that he presented at camp meeting? I was privileged to be the pastor assigned to that room. I got to hear him there, and I was scribbling notes as fast as I could. Had no idea that that was going to be the book that he was going to produce called Plain Revelation. I encourage you to go to ABC and get that book. It is just very much a blessing. So we hear the story, and we say, well, okay, this is good. So glad. So thank you for your faithfulness. But what does that have to do with us? We live in America. This is the land of the home of the free, the land of the free and the home of the brave. You know, this is, yeah, we're fine here. And the answer to that is things are changing. Things are changing. I want to share with you a book that I invite you and encourage you to pick up. It's called Live Not by Lies. Live Not by Lies by Rod Dreher. And what he's done in this book is he has gone and interviewed people who lived behind the Iron Curtain, Soviet bloc of those years. And he's interviewed them and to hear their stories. The first part is really their stories of these people and how they saw happening. The second part is how they live this out in terms of being together in the kitchen, you know, having their group there to pray together and to somehow encourage each other through this. I want to share with you here some statements that came up again and again in the first section. He said, the reason he did the interview was he began hearing from more and more people from the Eastern Bloc, people who had lived through the communist era there, saying things like, I'm becoming very concerned. I'm seeing things happen in America that remind me of what started there and how it began. I'll just read just a short bit here. Quote, I was born and raised in the Soviet Union. I'm frankly stunned how similar some of the developments are to the way that Soviet propaganda operated, says one professor now living in the Midwest. Another emigre professor, this one from Czechoslovakia, equally blunt. He told me he began noticing a shift a decade or so ago. He said they would be speaking together and friends would lower their voices and look over their shoulders when they began to express views that are not the mainstream view in America. They'd lower their voice and look over their shoulders. When he would express views in a normal tone of voice, the Americans would start to fidget and they would start to scan the room to see who might be listening. Quote, I grew up like this, he said. This is not supposed to be happening in America. So he makes the case for that in the first half of the book as to what it is that he sees happening in America of what he calls not hard totalitarianism. Hard totalitarianism would be like your mom spending a night in small Auschwitz and in those camps. The gulags. After this morning service, a young man came to me, one of the young adults, and came and said, I'm a Russian. My grandfather was sent to the gulags. I know this story. I know there are others in this congregation. I see you, Radhika, you know from the years that you lived in communist Romania under Ceausescu. That's where my family lived, also under Ceausescu. On my dad's side, my dad being Romanian. Let me just share just a little bit more here. He said, the old hard totalitarianism had a vision for the world that required the eradication of Christianity. The new soft totalitarianism does too. And we're not equipped to resist its sneakier attack. That's the case he's making here in the first half of the book. He goes on and says, today the Western world has become post-Christian, with large numbers of those born after 1980 rejecting religious faith. By the way, those are called the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. Sociologists call them the nuns. They're claiming no belief. This means that they will not only oppose Christians when we stand up for our principles, and then he says, in particular, three: defense of the traditional family, male and female and gender roles, and the sanctity of human life. But also, they will not even understand why they should tolerate dissent based on religious belief. I experienced that personally when I was the representative, it was called the legislative representative from the Oregon Conference to the Oregon Legislature. And there was a bill that had already passed the Senate and then was going to the House. And that bill was that Christian organizations would no longer be able to discriminate in their hiring. You would have to hire whoever came. And so in that, and it was aimed, well, yeah, that was the purpose. So there were pastors came to the State House in Oregon, there in Salem. And I came and I got late to the room, and there was a group of pastors already seated there from other churches, other denominations, with our representative from here, the Clackamas area. And they were sitting there, and I walked in. You could cut the tension with a knife, because I'm telling you what. And they were there saying, but you, and he's going, look. And I heard, I mean, I sat, and I sat down and I heard him say, he said, look. He said, you need to get used to it. You need to get used to it. You Christians have had your day. Now it's our turn. That wasn't in the Soviet Union. That was in Salem. And I looked there and I thought, Lord, what do I, give me something to say. And he said, so just get used to it. And he said, and the only chair left was next to him, and I'm sitting there. And I turned and I said, may I ask a question? He said, of course. And I said, by the way, end of the story, he and I became friends. We actually became friends. I liked going to his office more than any other office that I would go to the State House, to the representatives. That was in the future. But in that moment, I turned to him and I said, sir, when you hire your staff, and I'm not going to name his party, but I'm going to say, when you hire your staff, do you hire members from people who are part of other parties to be your staff members? And he just put his head back and laughed. He said, are you crazy? And I said, that's all we're asking. All we're asking is that we be able to hire people on our church staff that agree with the values that we find in the Bible that we believe in. And I said, that's what they did in Vermont. And he said, really? Can you get me paper on that? And I said, yes, I can. Give me time. And I get up and I ran out of there. And the Lord led me right to the right floor to find the right guy who had the paper on what Vermont had just passed. And I came back in and I said, this is it. And he said, I'll look at it. And I handed it to him. And, you know, long story short, again, it was voted down. But that happened in Oregon. So what I'm telling you is, so what Rod Dreher is doing is he's writing and he's saying, look, people, do you realize what's happening in America? Do you realize the very things that have happened that we think, oh, that's never in America? He goes on to say this, and I'll just read a little bit of this next page. We cannot hope to resist the coming soft totalitarianism if we do not have our spiritual lives in order. That's what this whole book is. The whole second half of the book is how to become spiritually strengthened in order to stand for what is facing us in this very moment. This is the message of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great anti-communist dissident, Nobel laureate, and Orthodox Christian. He believed the core of the crisis that created and sustained communism was not political, but a spiritual issue. After the publication of his Gulag Archipelago, and he exposed the rottenness of Soviet totalitarianism, he was expelled and he was exiled from in fact, it was just before we graduated, Kathy. It was 1974. But he was exiled, and I think it was on February 12 of 74. And he was expelled from the Soviet Union. But before he did, he published a final message to the Russian people, and he entitled it, Live Not by Lies. That was the title of what he sent to the people of Russia. In the essay, Solzhenitsyn challenged the claim that the totalitarian system was so powerful that ordinary man and woman cannot change it. Men and women cannot change it. Nonsense, he said. The foundation of totalitarianism is an ideology made of lies. The system depends for its existence on people's fear of challenging lies. Did you get that? I think it's the most important sentence here. The system depends for its existence on a people's fear of challenging the lies. Said the writer, quote, "Our way must be never knowingly support lies," end quote. Never knowingly support lies. Just the other night, three nights ago, Leanne and I were watching the Olympics, and it went to commercial break, and there was a particular pharmaceutical or drug being offered there, and then the young man who was speaking made this statement. He said, this particular drug has not been tested on those who were assigned female at their birth. And I turned to Leanne and I said, Lee, that's a lie. That is a lie. The government does not, nor does capitalism and all the corporations, the government, they do not assign, nobody assigns. God said, let us make man in our image, male and female created he them. That doesn't mean in this broken world, with genetic brokenness as well, that there are not people that are facing huge, hard issues around identity. But what it means is we know the truth, and we do not agree with the lie that you are assigned female and you're assigned male at your birth. No, that is a gift received from the Creator. The same is true of our rights. The same is true of our rights. Governments do not give us rights. We've been endowed with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. That is what this system has affirmed. You don't give us rights. Our rights come from the Creator. Your job is to protect our rights. That's the reality that you and I must begin to hand to the next generation. We're not ready for this. We are absolutely not ready for what's coming. Our way must be to never knowingly support lies. You may not have the strength to stand up in public and say what you really believe, like you did, Dubravka, and your family. But you can at least refuse to affirm what you do not believe. Don't raise your hand in that vote. Get up and walk out of the room if that's what they start saying that. No, you may not be able to overthrow totalitarianism, but you can find within yourself and your community the means to live in the dignity of truth. If we must live under the dictatorship of lies, the writer said, then our response must be, let their rule hold, but not through me. So for us, for you and me, as we live our lives, we read the story of Daniel. Oh, isn't that nice? In the lion's den, they all shut their mouths. True story. But we let it go to children's stories. This stuff is speaking to the reality of what it means to be followers of Jesus in our day. That's what Alistair Begg is talking about all the way through here in Brave by Faith. That's the challenge. And so I want to end with this verse. And it's Psalm 118. I don't know if you're still back there or not, Kevin, because we haven't actually gone through the verses we're going to use, but Psalm 118. In Psalm 118, verses 13 and 14, here it is. In this verse really fits the story of Daniel. I was pushed hard so that I was failing, but the Lord helped me. Next verse. The Lord is my strength. He's my song. He has become my salvation. And when that king, Darius to some of you, but when Darius came to that and he said, roll back the stone. Boy, you talk about resurrection morning. Roll back the stone. It actually says that the stone was rolled and he rolled back the stone and he says, Daniel, did your God, the God you serve, the living God? And Daniel goes, yes, he did. The living God. This God has, he was here, he shut the lion's mouth, he saved me. What does he say here? As he came near, O Daniel, servant of the living God, the God you serve continually, he's been able to deliver you from the lions. He said, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel. He shut the lions' mouths. They've not harmed me. I was found blameless before him. I'm also blameless before you, king. I never betrayed you. I've done no harm. And the king was exceedingly glad, and he commanded that Daniel be taken out of the den. Daniel was taken up out of the den. This is a resurrection moment in the scripture, the Old Testament, because no harm was found on him because he trusted in his God. It's true of Daniel. What happened on the third day was true of Jesus. He came forth from the tomb. It's the same Jesus, true in your life, Dubravka. The stone was rolled away. And all those teachers who said you would never succeed and your family was done, finished, and your family came through. That's the promise, the same God promising to you and me. Let's stand together, lift our voices, stand up for Jesus.